bean and wheat prices are all pushing against resistance at yesterday's highs, with rains making their way through the upper Midwest. But livestock prices, yeah, they're sliding to the downside. Planting delays, they are top shelf concerns for farmers, but tariff relief payment plans are dominating discussions inside the hallways at USDA.
From the studios of Farm Journal Broadcast, this is AgriTalk. We're talking with Greg Henderson of Drovers, plus Lynn Crisp from the National Corn Growers Association, about a new round of tariff relief payments. NCGA says a penny won't cut it. Tom Karst, editor of the Packer, talks tomato tariffs. And Steve Nelson with the Nebraska Farm Bureau on property tax reforms. Here's your Sultan of SWAT, the Zion of Farm Broadcasting, the Arya Stark of Ag Journalism, host Chip Flory.
Wow.
Oh, yes, sir.
Dude, Clinton, thank you so much. How are you today?
I'm good. I'm getting geared up for the big season finale, series finale this weekend.
Oh,
you watch,
man.
A little GOT, a little Game of Thrones, do you, Chip?
No.
Not a stitch, huh? That's what I was guessing.
No. No, you know, I am more of a... I'd rather sit and watch a basketball game or a baseball game or something like that. But, you know, I know what's going to happen at some point, though.
What's that?
My wife is going to get me to sit down and watch one episode, and I'm going to go, oh, my gosh, let's watch it all.
Well, and I'll tell you, I was not – that's exactly how that works, by the way. And I will tell you, I was not on this from the beginning, and then people kept talking about it. And at some point I decided, well, this has turned into something that is kind of a story for our time. And so I didn't want to get 20 or 30 years down the road and people being like, hey, do you ever watch MASH? Wow. And be like, you know, no.
Oh, that's awesome.
You know, that's what I'm saying.
Well, now, see, I don't know if I really need to make plans for 20 or 30 years down the road anymore. Well,
I know. I'm just, that's how I feel, you know, that this show has become. It's become that big.
Exactly. Yeah. I know exactly what you're talking about. So yesterday afternoon on the second hour of AgriTalk, we had a dairy day. Talked with Dee Faber, 84, Dwayne Faber, producer out in Washington State, and Alyssa Badger from High Ground Dairy about what's going on in the industry and in the markets. Today's kind of a Nebraska day.
Oh, yeah, it is. Know,
Lynn Crisp, president of the NCGA, is from Hastings. Nebraska, I think.
Okay.
I know he's from Nebraska. And then we've got Steve Nelson, president of the Nebraska Farm Bureau, on.
Well, look at you. Look at you, man, giving your equal opportunity.
Yeah.
Giving everybody a chance.
Yeah. You know, there is a lot of talk and a lot of speculation about what these payments are going to look like next, isn't there?
Oh, there is. And let's start there on the news. USDA Secretary Sonny Perdue late Wednesday commenting on a second installment of that Trump tariff aid, providing just a few details, saying that the cost could be as high as $20 billion, which is, Chip, above that $15 billion that the president had tweeted out. The biggest change is likely to be for other commodities like corn and wheat. At least that's what I'm sure Lynn will be saying whenever you talk to him. Those growers feeling like they didn't get an equitable share in the last MFP payment. USDA so far has spent about $10 billion in trade assistance under last year's program. So roughly $8.5 billion's been sent to 600,000 producers. Illinois, Iowa, Kansas, Nebraska, Indiana, the top states for payments.
Yeah, 600,000 producers on that seemed like
it's a lot.
It's a huge amount. That amount of money is like $14,000 a producer.
Well, you did math there. I see.
I did.
You did quick math.
No, I did it earlier.
No, exactly. But we don't have a lot of details. We're still waiting on details to come out. So, you know, that's something obviously we'll continue to cover, and maybe you'll get a few more details here by the end of the show. U.S. Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin speaking before the Senate Appropriations Subcommittee yesterday, saying U.S. negotiators are continuing to work with China. Here's what he said.
There's still a lot of work to do, but I can assure you that President Trump is determined that we have free and fair trade and wants to have a fair relationship with rules that we can compete fairly. As I've said, my expectation is we will most likely go to Beijing at some point in the near future to continue those discussions. And I think it's President Trump's expectation to meet with President Xi at the G20 at the end of June.
So more talks about having talks. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's at least the conversation continues, that they're not just walking away and everybody's, you know, putting up walls.
Right, right. If we can just get President Trump and President Xi together.
And you think that's what it'll take?
Well, that's the only time that's the only way we're going to get an opportunity to get both of them to sign something that says, yep, this is how we're going to go forward with trade.
Right, right. Yeah. New figures show those U.S. tariffs may be beginning to make a dent in the Chinese economy. China's factory output, yeah, consumer spending weakening in April. Factory growth output decelerated about 5.4%. That's according to the National Bureau of Statistics. Retail sales growth, it fell 7%, Chip. So it's maybe having a little bit of pressure or applying a little bit of pressure there.
Yesterday afternoon, there was a spurt of optimism that something is going to get done on this. And the reason is because of the slow economy in China, slowdown in the U.S. economy. You better get something done here pretty quick, or we're going to do too much damage to the U.S. economy.
Yeah, exactly. And maybe some movement on this USMCA, the steel aluminum tariffs, could be working out a deal with Canada and Mexico. Some indications that they may have figured that out, maybe.
Right, right. I wanted to talk to Lynn about that and see what he's hearing on that. So we'll do that here in a little bit.
Sounds good.
All right, Clinton, thank you, brother. We'll talk to you later.
You bet.
All right, that is Clinton Griffiths, host and anchor of Ag Day. Let's bring in Greg Henderson, the editorial director there at Drovers. How you doing today, Greg?
Good morning, Cliff, or Chip. I'm doing very well. Sorry good. There.
But, yeah, no worries.
Looking forward to grilling a steak this weekend if it doesn't rain us out again.
Hey, you know, there's this thing called a shelter. You know, I don't let the rain stop me from grilling steaks. Okay.
Well, unfortunately, you're not like all Americans, because that's one of the problems we're having. You know, not enough sunny, warm weather this spring has kind of derailed beef sales. And yeah. We're sending a lot of cattle to slaughter, 671,000 head last week, and it's showing in the markets, because we've seen a $12 decline in the beef cutout in the last 3 weeks. And, of course, that futures market's not helping any, and feed yards have cattle coming in. They want to get pens moved. The whole thing is just contributing to a downslide right now.
Yeah. Is that having any impact on the retail price?
Absolutely. Retail prices are declining, and that's a good thing for this particular time. And beef demand, they, you know, measure that, is still strong. Consumers are still actively buying beef. It's just that, you know, the channels have not moved enough right now because of, again, the weather and you know, packers are content to take a little less because they're making good money right now.
Yeah. Yeah, the Packers are on a historical run, aren't they?
Absolutely. Been good for at least 2 years.
Yeah, yeah, it's really impressive. Greg, thanks, buddy. Grill that steak, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thank you, Chip.
All right, that is Greg Henderson, the editorial director at Drovers right here at Farm Journal. Okay, when we come back, I'm really looking forward to this conversation. We've got a lot of ground that we need to cover. We've got Lynn Crisp, president of the National Corn Growers Association, coming up. They've already started a new hashtag. Hashtag a penny won't cut it. Obviously, reference back to the MFP payment.
In this industry, your name is everything. It's the legacy you fight to live up to and work to leave behind. Merck Animal Health Brands have a 50-year history of providing the products cattle need to stay healthy. With innovation, passion, and integrity, we'll do what's right for your operation and for you. This is why Merck Animal Health works. Visit MAHcattle.com to see how Merck Animal Health can work for you.
Powerful.
Effective.
Proven. Tough.
Consistent.
Reliable. A lot of adjectives can describe a herbicide we control, but one only applies to Liberty Herbicide. Superior. Liberty Herbicide has no known resistance in row crops, more convenient application flexibility, and excellent control of key weeds. All backed by the Liberty Weed Control Guarantee. Learn more at liberty.basf.com. Grow smart with BASF. Always read and follow label directions.
We're joined today by Joan Ruskamp, past chairman of the Cattlemen's Beef Board, to talk about what your dollar does to promote demand for beef. Joan, what's new with the beef checkoff?
Thanks for having me on. According to our most recent producer survey, 80% of producers today say the checkoff drives demand for beef. So I'd like to share some of the ways we're doing that. One example is foreign marketing. We're exporting about $8 billion worth of beef overseas. That's huge, especially considering how we've opened up markets in Asia, creating value for producers around $320 per head slaughtered. Additionally, the checkoff has helped boost retail meat case sales to a six-year high, with strong demand expected to continue through 2019. We also launched a campaign to showcase real ways the checkoff is using producer dollars to drive demand. It's called Your Dollar Does. You can learn more and sign up for the newsletter at drivingdemandforbeef.com.
That's great, Joan. Thanks for joining us from the Cattlemen's Beef Board. To learn more, go to drivingdemandforbeef.com, funded by the Beef Checkoff.
Find it now at shopfarmjournal.com. Brand new to the shop is the best of tractor tales, as seen each week on U.S. Farm Report. This two DVD set features dozens of classic machines and the collectors who bring them back to life. You'll get one DVD that's all green, the best of John Deere. The second DVD includes classics like Alice Chalmers and many more. Buy one DVD for $29.95 or buy the set for $49.95. Order today at shopfarmjournal.com or call toll-free 877-847-9599. You can find it now at shopfarmjournal.com.
They're not the type to ask for help, the ones who beat the sun to their workday. But after floods erased generations of farmland, livestock, and crops, that resolve was shaken. It's time to show our farmers and ranchers that when waters rise, so do good people. Maybe they won't ask for help, but that doesn't mean we shouldn't answer. Donate to our farmers and ranchers at staystrongnebraska.com.
Radiate is designed to help crops build longer, stronger, healthier root systems. Ask your Nutrien Ag Solutions crop consultant about Radiate or go to RadiateRoots.com for more information. Always read and follow label directions.
Good morning, everybody out there. I see that we've got some people listening. Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. We've got a lot to talk about with our guest right here. We've got Lynn Crisp. Lynn is the president of the National Corn Growers Association. He joins us right now. Lynn, how are you this morning? How are things over there in Hastings?
Yeah, Chip, it's good to be with you. I need to be a little bit careful how I'm talking about how things are in Hastings, because we are in a part of the country that is getting our farm work done, and and people are on the backside of completing planting, believe it or not.
Right. Right. Yeah. You know, yesterday on the Farmer Forum, Lynn, I don't know if you heard it or not, but we had we had Jared McDaniel down in Oklahoma, who's a corn grower down there in the panhandle, who is in your situation. You know, things are moving along, looking really good. And then we had Rock Ketchnig on over in northern Illinois. And Rock's been doing this for 43 years. It's his 43rd crop, and he's never seen a situation like he's got going right now. I mean, it's really unbelievable. Some of the decisions that are going to have to be made here going forward. USMCA, before we get to the structure of what the tariff payment might look like, USMCA, Lynn, are you hearing that there's some movement on this as far as the Section 232 tariffs go?
Yeah, that's what the word is that we're hearing, which is extremely positive news if that actually comes to effect, because we need to get that 232 lifted so that we can move with getting the USMCA ratified. And that's another really important project that the National Corn Growers have on our list of things to do here, and gearing up to get that done.
Yeah, boy, that would be excellent if we are seeing some progress there. I tell you what, it would make for a more enjoyable conversation with Senator Chuck Grassley from Iowa. The last time I had him on the show, we started talking about the 232s, and his mood turned pretty sour in a hurry. He wants to see those lifted on Canada and Mexico so that we can get USMCA done as well. Okay. There's a lot of jockeying going on by the commodity groups right now, Lynn, trying to figure out what the next round of tariff relief payments will look like, isn't there?
Yeah, that announcement took us by surprise, and we were expecting a resolve with the negotiations with China, and when it turned bad a week ago, then this subject came up, and as far as corn growers go, you know, the market facilitation program didn't go well for us the last go around, and this seems to be on a fast track, and we have our concerns about how it's going to go this way too.
Yeah, and now I saw that there's a hashtag out there on the at National Corn site, hashtag a penny won't cut it. Now, When I see that, my initial thought is, okay, well, NCGA is jockeying for more than a penny in a payment this time. But optimistically, I'm looking at it and saying, okay, maybe National Corn is saying, don't even worry about a payment. Let's just get this trade thing figured out and move forward.
Yeah, we'd much rather have the certainty of being able to trade with our business partners around the world, and a penny doesn't make that much difference, you know, on the bottom line as it is reflected against the harm that is being done in other aspects to our farm economy. And our farm economy is just absolutely on the rocks. Yeah. And it has been for a number of years, and USDA has us projected for another step down. And I don't know where another step down comes from, because we're already bumping along the bottom. And so we'll just have to see. But we're putting our best efforts forward here to communicate, you know, what USDA missed the last go around and come up with a penny. And there's a lot more to trade and its effects on any commodity, directly or indirectly, that would reflect more than a penny just on the discussion of tariffs. And we see that reflected in the commodities market on the exchange. Just take last week, we had the tariff announcement. We took a leg down and got some more negative news. You know, all of a sudden we're down 15 cents, and that was supposed to be in the face of something positive market-wise with a planting delay.
Right.
And we're getting it now, but that's a week late. When you start from 15 cents down and you get a 15 cents bump, that just gets you back to where you were the week before and does nothing.
Yep.
You know, and so
I hear you.
And there's a good reason why there's a foul mood amongst the farmers across the country right now.
Yeah. So this payment that's coming, should it be based on actual 2019 production like the 2018 MFP was, or should it be based on historical production?
Well, that gets you into another conundrum in this situation where, you know, as you're well covering the delayed planting here. Yep. And probably into a situation where we're going to be dealing with record prevented planting. And so 19 crops already got its problems as far as acres planted and harvested. So then you're dealing with 18, and there was some pretty large swaths of the country that were left out due to pockets of drought last year. And so, to be compliant, you know, with the way that these things are handled is a difficulty. But I'd be remiss in saying that, you know, harvested acres in 2019 is the way to be figuring something like that.
Hmm. Yeah, so if we have to wait for final harvested acreage figures, well, the payment may not come until the end of the year or early next year.
Well, the reality of that is it may happen anyway because we're under constraints with how much assistance can be provided through the farm programs, and it depends upon which category they're in, but totally you're up just over $19 billion in the last go-round of market facilitation program payments was $12 billion. And
right.
not all of that's going to count, but if you throw another one in the current year, then you could get yourself into trouble. And so this thing's got to be thought out a little more, and it was indicated it was going to be quick, but, we want to get it right here so that we're not, throwing gasoline on the fire here,
okay.
Causing us more problems.
That's a good segue into this next question that comes from at Hort Forsyth. He says, why should corn farmers expect a government payment to offset tariff impacts? Let's just sell more ethanol.
Well, that would be good, but that takes me back to our discussion on waivers,
yep.
As well as domestically, as well as the trade and the loss of trade opportunities, and we tried to make the case, it does affect corn, but ethanol and dry distillers grains into China was part of the
yep.
the casualties, over the tariff situation, and so that didn't help. And then, coming out of 18, we were in a situation where 53 waivers were granted and took out almost
it's like 2.6
million bushel. Yeah, it was just a little over 200 million gallons or 2 billion gallons.
Billion gallons.
What it was, because we
yep.
were we were looking at the 15 billion gallon market there and took out 2 billion, which is 500 million bushels of corn in lost market opportunity.
Yep.
And last year we were in a situation where in our ethanol sales in this country was down for the first time, in the last 20 years.
Yep. Oh, yep.
And that's what we're talking about as far as the cumulative effect here and what corn
yep.
farmers are looking at and the tough economy.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Lynn, thank you so much for taking the time to have the conversation. I know that there's a lot of balls up in the air on this, and there's still a lot of questions that need to be nailed down, but we'll get to it here in a little bit, okay? Thanks, Lynn.
All right. Thanks, Kip. It's good to be with you today.
Well, thank
keep
you.
Up
thank
the good
you.
Work.
Thank
All
you,
right.
sir. Appreciate that. That is Lynn Crisp, NCGA president. A lot of questions. There's more questions to ask about this. Central Life Sciences reminds you to get control of flies on your swine operation with Clarifly Larvicide and Starbar products. Clarifly Larvicide prevents the emergence of nuisance flies from animal manure by as much as 96%, and Starbar features a lineup of baits, traps, and sprays that tackle your fly problem. Flies spread disease, impact your neighbors, and interfere with swine weight gain. Visit centralflycontrol.com. That's three words, centralflycontrol.com.
Every season, you try to raise the bar to achieve your best corn yield ever. But disease can stand in the way, like gray leaf spot, northern corn leaf blight, anthracnose leaf blight, and southern rust. New Dilaro fungicide can stop them. Two different modes of action work on the diseases for the entire spray interval, delivering best-in-class dual mode of action residual efficacy for extended performance. It's the help you need for personal best yields. Keep raising the bar with Dilaro from Bayer. Always read and follow label instructions.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
Joining us now is Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady. Brian, corn tried to get back up and test resistance at yesterday's high, didn't it?
It did, Chip. Good solid price performance so far this morning. We're trading about 5 to 7 cents higher here at mid-morning, but I like the price action. I do want to see it push above yesterday's highs, though. I think that would encourage more short covering on the by the funds. And, really all these markets right now, and soybeans and wheat as well, need to push above yesterday's highs. But corn is probably going to be the leader based on what the early price action is this morning, if not the winter wheat markets, because they're performing right. Very well, too, with double-digit gains.
Yeah, I was surprised by that more than anything because it was a fairly close that we saw in wheat yesterday, but a good performance there to get things started today. I don't know. You think we keep this going?
Well, with the funds where they're at and the forecast where it's at, I mean, it's very wet moving forward. And I think, that's the concern with planting delays is increasing day by day here. Just because of that wet forecast. And even the 30 and 90 day outlooks, when we got those from the National Weather Service, they indicate that June it's going to be wet, especially in the Western Corn Belt and then across the entire Corn Belt for the summer months. So that's good if you get the seed in the ground. If you don't get the seed in the ground, then it's a negative, obviously.
Yeah, obviously. Little bit of strength coming into the cattle trade.
Little bit. We did see sharply lower cash trade again this week, but the futures are at a big discount, so I think that's just a little bit of relief buying there or corrective buying. Hog market, quite honestly, it's absorbed the net cancellation or net reduction by China this morning relatively well.
Thank you, Brian. That's Pro Farmer Editor Brian Grady.
Hi, I'm Ag Day host Clinton Griffiths, and I invite you to join me each morning as we cover the nation's food system, from fields of green to orchards of orange and livestock everywhere in between. America runs on agriculture, and here at Ag Day, agriculture's what we do best. Listen as our analysts track the markets, learn about innovations in technology and sustainability, and live the country lifestyle through the eyes of rural America. Join me, Clinton Griffiths, for Ag Day, the country experience.
I'm Andrew McRae, your host for Farming the Countryside. We're talking about issues, tips, and trends affecting rural and agricultural America.
Then it was the burden on the local office. Essentially, you just have Arc County right now, or PLC.
On each show, I talk with guests who provide the latest info on important topics and the challenges and successes on their own operations.
We had an open house and invited the entire community. It was a huge event. We had about 750 people show up.
The Farming the Countryside podcast is brought to you by Nutrien Ag Solutions, the world's largest provider of crop inputs and services.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
Yeah, like I said, there's still a lot of questions out there. Welcome back to AgriTalk, everybody. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Calvin says, I hope you really grill the National Corn President. That's the worst campaign. The hashtag a penny won't cut it I've ever seen. Corn farmers don't want it. I agree. I don't care for the hashtag a penny won't cut it. Chad had a great question that I got to ask. I just saw, Tom also hit me with the MFP payment shouldn't be a payment that rewards production. Supply is part of the problem. And yesterday when I talked with Rock Ketchnig and Jared McDaniel on the Farmer Forum, when we got to the tariff relief payment, the second round, and had a conversation about it, the assumption that they were working with was that we are going to be looking at a payment that would be based on actual production, exactly like what we had on a year ago with the MFP. It was based on actual production in 2018. Well, I tell you what. I know two guys this morning that are planting beans when they should be planting corn. And the reason that they're doing it is because they think that it's going to favor soybeans again and it's going to be based on actual production. I don't think so. I don't think it's going to be based on actual production. I think it's going to be based on historical. I don't know how the payment is going to be calculated, but devil's advocate here, guys. I'm just going to throw this out. Should USDA lean on a potential revenue insurance payment of some kind as some kind of an offset to this payment? Shouldn't that be figured in somehow, some way? Should there be a pay cap? If the Trump administration is trying to make you whole with a payment like this, then there probably shouldn't be a pay cap on it. Now you start blowing through the top. And where do you draw the line? You heard Lynn talk about the value of commodities being directly or indirectly, and we're going to talk with Tom Carstair in a second, and the guys that he deals with in the vegetable and produce markets, they're looking at this as well. But if it impacts your market directly or indirectly, tell me this: should a guy that's chopping corn get a payment because the value of that silage isn't that driven by the value of the corn? I mean, there are all kinds of questions, and they're going to try to get this done in a hurry. And you know what happens when they try to do things in a hurry. Tom Carst, the editor of the Packer, joins us right now. Tom, it's good to talk with you again. How are you?
Hey, Chip. I'm doing good.
Good.
Busy for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, the audience that I talk to on a daily basis, Tom, when we talk about tariffs, the thought goes to pork. The thought goes to beans. But we're fighting trade battles all the time when it comes to produce and vegetables. What is the latest here on the suspension agreement of it affects the trade of fresh tomatoes with Mexico, right?
Exactly. Yeah. You know, the Commerce Department and the Mexican growers had a suspension agreement in place since 1996 that basically set a reference price, a minimum price for imports of Mexican tomatoes. Well, Commerce Department terminated that agreement on May 7th because the Florida growers were not happy with it. And so now all the imports are paying a 17.5% duty. So that's added cost, and the negotiations are continuing for a new agreement, but there's no resolution yet. So the trade is left to deal with this new tariff and try to figure it out and kind of figure out how to adjust to the new reality. So it's kind of a back and forth time.
Okay, so what is the new reality here, Tom? Well, how is it going to impact? And does it have an impact on the broader USMCA?
That's a good question. I think it's another point of friction between the two countries.
Okay.
And it could very well be. I know Florida is a big, important state for passing a trade deal. So that's always a factor. And there, of course, Florida is a big tomato growing state. Finding a resolution is important. I think, you know, with the way things are, it's not there's no peace in the valley with between Florida and Mexico right now. So I think it is a concern if it doesn't get resolved. If there's not a new agreement, I think it could represent a point of contention that just could complicate efforts to pass that deal.
And what does that mean to the price of tomatoes in the grocery store?
I think it's going to, you know, on one hand, there's no minimum price that tomatoes right. have to meet to come into the country, but there is a 17% duty. So it's going to be an added expense. Okay. How does that affect? And you know, there are other tomatoes, especially this time of year here in the U.S., of course, right. and from other suppliers in Canada and so on. So I don't think you'll see a exact 17% increase in the price of tomatoes. And some have said, you know, prices are going to increase 40 or 80% at different times of the year. But right now, I think things are, you know, the cost will be passed on, but I think it's going to be a little bit at a time. I don't know if it's going to all appear at once.
Okay. All right. So obviously, I would think that this is going to be one of the main stories that you're covering in this week's The Packer. What else are you working on?
You know, China is with the tariffs. That's interesting. You know, the cherry growers are suffering because they can't get into China as they would like to. Both California and the Northwest, even though the latest round of tariff increases from China only hit frozen fruits and vegetables, so there wasn't anything new added to it. But they're still under that yoke of the big increases last year, so they're not happy with that. You know, a lot of people in the industry, just as in agriculture in general, like Trump. They like his deregulation efforts, and they like a lot of things about him. But I think it's beginning to be harder to deal with these tariffs, the continuing, you know, burden that they're feeling.
Yeah, Tom, I think you're right. The even the biggest supporters of Trump are starting to question, I wonder how much longer I can handle this, how much longer I can continue to support it. And but at the same time, they'll say, listen, you've made it this far. Don't quit now with China.
Yeah, I've heard that, too. I've heard like a grape grower on LinkedIn the other day was saying, yeah, this is exactly what Trump needs to do. And, you know, so, I mean, I think there's a lot of hope that this tactic of Trump's doubling down can work.
Right. You know, and yesterday the tweets, the talking about the patriotic American farmers, that rubbed some growers the wrong way. Did you pick up on any of that?
I saw that reference. That's a little bit of a, kind of patronizing, perhaps.
Yeah.
I don't know. I guess they have self-interest as well, though. So they've got if their business is threatened, I think they're going to respond as patriotic business owners as well. So part of the deal.
Talking with Lynn Crispier, the president of the National Corn Growers Association, obviously lots of jockeying going on for what that payment, that the next tariff relief payment is going to look like. And he mentioned, and I've heard this phrase kicked around, Tom, those markets directly or indirectly affected by the tariffs. That if they are looking at making payments into markets that have been quote unquote indirectly affected, there isn't a product that farmers grow that wouldn't be eligible for a payment then, right?
Yeah, I guess that would be. Yeah, it's, everything has that competitive effect on the marketplace. So I would think that would be I could raise that point. So I think. that would be a tough one to fulfill for sure.
Yeah. Now, in the first round of the MFPs, there were payments made to produce and to produce growers, weren't there?
I think the cherry growers received some payments. They had to apply for those, of course, and I think maybe the nut producers also. A lot of it, though, was in terms of commodity purchases or perhaps, promotion of export markets and indirect ways to help out. So mostly not, but there was some of that as well.
Yeah. And there was like $1.2 billion spent on food purchases for donation to food banks and to other nutrition programs. That may have helped the produce market more than corn market, soybean market, whatever. That's where the help came from that program, correct?
Yes, you're right. Yeah. You're right. I mean, I think there still people were saying it's not exactly the same as when China buys these high value premium oranges, from growers. It's not going to be the same return, when you sell to for a food bank or what have you. It's just different. It's not going to be the same.
Yeah, that's exactly right, because you're not buying the same product. And the markets, Tom, I made this argument to somebody that was looking for an opinion on it this morning. The markets know that the core problem still exists. They know that those tariffs are still there. The market knows. And because of that, you can make the big purchase of a commodity, move it into the food banks, the nutrition programs, but you don't see a price reaction or that much of a price reaction because the core problem still exists. So,
right.
Need to move on.
The shadow is looming still. So, yeah.
Exactly. Fun conversation, Tom. Thank you, sir.
Oh, thank you so much. All right.
You bet. That is Tom Karst, the editor of The Packer. Coming up next, we've got the president of the Nebraska Farm Bureau, Steve Nelson, up next.
Save time and capitalize on market opportunities with Pro Farmer's Daily Advice Monitor. Whether on your desktop or on your phone, visit tryprofarmer.com and get a generous one-month free trial. Pro Farmer only focuses on the news that impacts the market, so you won't scroll through pages of articles to find what's really impacting your business. Plus, get full access to cash bids, charting tools, and more. Visit TryProFarmer.com right now. That's TryProFarmer.com.
Find it now at ShopFarmJournal.com. Brand new to the shop is the best of tractor tales, as seen each week on U.S. Farm Report. This two DVD set features dozens of classic machines and the collectors who bring them back to life. You'll get one DVD that's all green, the best of John Deere. The second DVD includes classics like Alice Chalmers and many more. Buy one DVD for $29.95 or buy the set for $49.95. Order today at ShopFarmJournal.com or call toll-free 877-847-9599. You can find it now at ShopFarmJournal.com.
They're not the type to ask for help, the ones who beat the sun to their workday. But after floods erase generations of farmland, livestock, and crops, that resolve was shaken. It's time to show our farmers and ranchers that when waters rise, so do good people. Maybe they won't ask for help, but that doesn't mean we shouldn't answer. Donate to our farmers and ranchers at staystrongnebraska.com.
The premier Farm Journal Hemp College is coming to Lexington, Kentucky on June 19th. This one-day farmer-focused event will get you on the right production path with information on the best agronomic practices for hemp production, marketing, legal considerations, and policy news. Interact with growers and industry experts to gather answers to all your questions. Register for Farm Journal Hemp College at regonline.com/hempcollege.
We spoke with Carrie Grossweiler, marketing lead for seed treatments with BASF, about Ponchovotivo 2.0.
2018 was a great year for us, not only in our own internal trials, but also with our seed company partners and growers last year. So they got to see the early emergence benefits, the increased height, fuller leaves, and then ultimately at harvest time, they saw the yield benefits, which is a real challenge when you're growing 250 bushel corn these days. 2019 shaping up really nice for us because we've had some seed companies go ahead and adopt this technology and are putting it on their seed. So growers are going to, across the Midwest, have the opportunity to buy their corn seed with Ponchovotivo 2.0 and experience that for themselves on their farms. We continue to do trials and demo the product, and we're just encouraging growers to go in and ask for it from their seed dealer or retailer.
Today I'm talking to Dr. Randall Spear, a bovine veterinarian and president of Ashland Veterinary Center in Ashland, Kansas. It's spring turnout season. This is the time when vaccination strategies can significantly impact calf performance out in the field. From a veterinarian's perspective, what is the illness that is of greatest concern during this time, and what do you do to prevent it?
On any ranch, the number one illness that we see when they go to a feed yard or they go to somebody else's place is respiratory disease. We start with colostrum, and then we may augment that colostral immunity once it starts to wane. It may be at 3 months or so, we'll vaccinate those calves with a Vista product, Vista once. And then in some ranches, it'd be ideal to put a pre-weaning shot in them.
Okay, so how do you choose a vaccine? What strains do you want to cover in order to prevent respiratory disease?
Vista once has IBR, two strains of BBD, a BRSV, and a PI3 in it. It has both Manhemia hemolytica as well as Pasteurel multilis. And some of the other vaccines don't have that present. It's a very smooth vaccine. We don't see the stress responses from that. We're quite comfortable using it. It doesn't squish that immune system and knock that calf either off feed or keep him from nursing. With a modified live vaccine, we'll stimulate a little more robust immune response. That is a critical time period in that calf's immune system, and we need to fully protect that.
And these vaccinations, they add value to the calves, don't they?
If we use a Vista product like Vista once prior to weaning, either at branding time or pre-weaning vaccination program, we can add value to those calves. It's safe, it's efficacious for the needs that we think are important to prevent issues of health during stressful times during those calves' life and prepare them for a long and productive life.
Animal health is obviously a top priority, and your insights on vaccinating to prevent respiratory disease, really important stuff. Thank you, Dr. Spear.
When news breaks, the newsmakers talk about it on AgriTalk with Chip Flory.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm your host, Chip Flory. This is AgriTalk. We've covered a lot of ground in today's show already, and And right now we're going to head back out to Nebraska, have a conversation with Steve Nelson, president of the Nebraska Farm Bureau. Steve, welcome back to AgriTalk. How are things going?
Well, I'm happy to be back on the program with you.
Yeah.
And a lot of things happening in Nebraska. We've had some pretty good weather here for a few days, and there's been quite a lot of planting taking place. But forecast is for some rains here beginning tonight and over the weekend. Some possibilities of some bad weather, some bad storms, so we're concerned about that. Certainly would not be something that would be good on top of the bad weather that we've had over the last couple months.
Yeah, absolutely. Matter of fact, this afternoon on the show, Steve, just you're giving me an opportunity to promote it, so I'm going to. This afternoon on the show, we're going to be talking with Michael Clark and Kirk Hens from BAMWX.com about this stretch of weather that we're getting into, and we'll find out where the red flag should be flying the highest from the guys at BAMWX. We're going to talk property taxes here in a second, but Steve, if I could put you in front of the Senate right now, what would you tell them about that disaster aid package?
Well, it's very important that we get the disaster aid package passed through the Senate, get that taken care of. There are a lot of things in that piece of legislation that need to be taken care of. Obviously, the things that would help farmers and ranchers as it relates to the recent disasters that we've had here in Nebraska and in the surrounding states, that's, of course, top of mind from my perspective. But there's also things in there that are helpful to those that have been affected by storms over the past year or so around the country. So we really do need to get the disaster bill passed.
Yeah.
Outside of agriculture, there's some very important things in there as well as it relates to taking care of some of the military bases that have been damaged. And, of course, we have that case here in Nebraska also. So there's just a number of things in there, and time is of the essence. We really do need to get it done.
Absolutely. I'm glad that you brought up the military bases. You know, number one, we've got Armed Services Day coming up this weekend. And Steve, that is a forgotten piece of this disaster aid bill. And I think it's very important that we get this done.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, so often that legislation will have lots of different pieces in. And sometimes we'll hear people say, well, that particular element shouldn't be there, or it doesn't make sense in the legislation. But certainly this bill is really designed to cover many different areas, and that's one that's very important.
Absolutely. Okay, when I think of property taxes, the state of Ohio and the state of Nebraska are the first two that pop into my mind because it just seems like it's gotten out of control, Steve. And right now, there may be a legitimate chance of getting some serious reform going in the state of Nebraska, huh?
Well, that's right. There is a bill that is LB 289 that's before the legislature here in Nebraska that is a very important bill for agriculture. This bill does a lot of things that a lot of people have been asking for. We've seen a major shift of the cost of education onto property taxes, particularly rural property taxes.
Yeah.
This bill deals with that in very important ways. And throughout the discussion over many years, often it's been talked about that the root of the problem is how we fund schools. And this bill does a lot to affect how we fund schools in the state of Nebraska, and in turn does a lot to rebalance who pays for the cost of education in the state of Nebraska. It's a very good bill. We're unfortunately running out of days here in our legislature. Something needs to happen very quickly, but our message certainly is that this is what Nebraskans want. This is what Nebraskans need. This would be true for farmers and ranchers, but it's also true for property taxpayers at every level in the state of Nebraska. And the legislature needs to get this done above anything else that is remaining on the schedule.
Very cool. What about the governor? Does Governor Ricketts support it?
He does not, and the governor has been supportive, at least in his conversations about property tax. One of the things that LB 289 does is rebalance revenue sources, and so it eliminates some sales tax exemptions that are there today. These are exemptions that none of our surrounding states have, so it doesn't really affect our competitiveness. It broadens the tax base, which is something that is often considered to be a conservative principle. In essence, does not raise taxes. It just shifts where the tax money comes from. So we are on the low side in Nebraska when you consider the three main tax sources of property tax, sales tax, and income tax. The short leg of the stool is really sales tax. And so what this would do is increase revenue from sales taxes by eliminating exemptions, raising the rate a small amount, and then using that to offset again, that over-reliance we have on property taxes. This is essentially revenue neutral. It's a dollar-for-dollar shift, but there are some in our legislature and some in our state who view that as a tax increase. And so we at this time do not have the support of the governor on LB 289, but what we have heard when we travel around the state, what practically every senator from whatever side of the aisle tells us as they talk to people in their districts, is that we need property tax relief in the state of Nebraska, yeah. That's the number one issue. And this bill is an opportunity to provide property tax relief for all Nebraskans.
Yeah, getting that property tax relief out there, I think, is you know, when I look at what's going on in Nebraska, and I'm not saying that it's cheap in Iowa or cheap in Illinois or Indiana or anything like that, Missouri. I'm not saying it's cheap, but I know that Nebraska is kind of an extreme case when it comes to property taxes out there and rural property, farm ground taxes.
Right. When we look at the states that surround Nebraska, we're in multiples times higher than... Yeah. Than every one of our surrounding states, and so that certainly puts our producers at a competitive disadvantage, and so this is something that really needs to get fixed here in the state.
Exactly, Steve. We got to go. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me on. Appreciate it very much.
You bet. That is Steve Nelson, president of the Nebraska Farm Bureau. Hey, thanks for listening today. Thanks to Greg Henderson, Lynn Crisp, and Tom Karst for joining us this afternoon. BAM WX, tomorrow morning, a free-for-all right here on AgriTalk.
Oh, hey, bro. I'm an off-brand tractor filter. You know, the one they're practically giving away at the farm store. So a lot of people choose me to filter their precious oil, fuel, or air, but I don't work as hard as your tractor's OEM filter. I am under-engineered and made from cheaper components, so dust and contaminants, they're your problem, brah.
Off-brand filters are not John Deere filters. OEM filters are engineered for maximum performance in your John Deere machine. Don't risk it with anything less.
Sometimes life is wonderful, and sometimes it's not. Cherish the good, but always be prepared for life's challenges. Private healthcare is private health insurance for ages 65 and under with medical, dental, vision, and even prescription coverage. If you're looking for health coverage at the best price and your annual household income is $35,000 or more, give us a call at 800-626-4910. That's 800-626-4910.